You're listening to Mouthstalgia, October 5th, 2009.
Hold on to your hats and glasses. This here's the wildest podcast in the wilderness.
Mouthstalgia.
Everybody neat and pretty? Then on with the show.
Welcome to Mouthstalgia, your podcast about Disneyland, Disney's California Adventure, and everything else Disney. We have with us today Jeff.
Hello, everybody.
And Becky.
Hey.
And Kristen.
Jumbo.
And our special guest, Henry.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
So, good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
He asked. You guys didn't respond. Come on.
Well, you were so quick.
Well, because there was like a little tiny cricket, and then I feel like I had to jump in.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
Way to squash that cricket. You're our expert cricket squasher. That's awesome. So, welcome, Henry.
Yeah, Henry's from touringplans.com and representing the unofficial guide. But we will get into that more after we go through our Mouthstalgia Roundup.
Get ready for the weekly Mouthstalgia Roundup.
Today's Mouthstalgia Roundup is, what attraction would you like to see with a holiday slash Halloween overlay?
Submitted by our forum member, Omnimover, right?
That's correct.
So thank
Not
you.
Omnicrom?
Omnimover.
That's a great
right?
name.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks for the suggestions. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what overlay would I install for the holiday? Definitely Storybook Land. Canal boats. Definitely.
Jeff,
that could be
simmer down.
That could be a horror show. It already practically is. Can you imagine
for Halloween?
Like
you
little,
would do it?
Like I can just see like little Barbies coming out with like a chases and attacks and violence.
Barbie does not belong.
They're laying on the front lawn. Can't stand like, it over with an axe.
Like Storybook Land massacre.
Oh, like Pinocchio's up in flames. Like all the little.
See, you should be on the team, the design team.
So wrong.
Pinocchio burns.
Jasmine and the ladder hanging from their carpet.
If like, the kid's little... not crying, you didn't do it right.
Yeah, oh. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with that Storybook Land because really, it's already a horror show.
That's not true. That's a good ride, Jeff.
It is a good ride, but it's also just crazy. And especially if you get the right
What's
cast member.
What's crazy about Miniature Plants?
Wouldn't that one actually be kind of pretty as like a holiday? Like
with
Christmas
all the
time?
LEDs.
Yeah, you could decorate everything with Christmas lights.
Yeah.
Not really, really
not
small
as
Christmas
funny
lights.
As your
yeah,
Halloween one.
I'm going to go with the Halloween.
All right.
But holiday could work, I guess.
Okay, Becky, how about you?
I'm going to choose Splash Mountain solely because I think it'd be ironic to dress up the characters in the big showboat end because it would be like a character dressed up as another character dressed up as another character. Because,
yes.
You know, you start with the recycled parts and then you're continually like...
How many layers of costuming
can we
get on these?
Or they could just dress them up like they used to be.
Robots.
And then that would be their costume.
They could wear... They could put back on the America Sings. They're all wearing Stars and Stripes vests.
People would be so confused. Is it 4th of July? Is it Halloween? What is this? Am I in the South? I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Thanks.
That's clever, right. Becky.
You know, did you ever go on... Have you been to Not Scary Farm?
No.
They have
no.
The log ride they do up, like, with horrible scenes
okay.
of massacre. So
that's
I kind
fabulous.
Of thought about that. Anyway, how about you, Kristen?
I would do an overlay on the Jungle Cruise, because
oh.
who doesn't like to see animals in costumes?
Attack. Animals attack.
Hippos and tutus?
No, like, they'd be fine. Like, the hippos would have to wear those little deely boppers, because they're kind of under the water. You
oh.
know, like, a little, like, light-up bat headbands,
oh,
those
yeah.
kinds of things. But a giraffe in a costume? That's just good. Like, it would be more of this fun route, not the so much scary.
You know what I'd like to see? A giraffe in a tuxedo.
See? That's a good look.
How would you do that?
One
do
little
that?
Tiny bow tie at the
like,
top,
way up at the
and
top,
then his suit
and then
at the
long...
bottom.
Really long tails.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be more ironic, though, if the Jungle Cruise was a holiday overlay so that it was, like, Christmas and you had snow in the jungle or something like
no,
that?
No, I want Halloween.
That is funny. like,
no.
at the North Pole Cruise. Like, they
yeah.
turn it into an Alaskan cruise.
No,
ooh,
you're ruining my
thing.
They could sell tickets to the Alaskan cruise at the end.
Would the skippers change their spiel?
Yes,
oh,
they
yes.
would. It would have to be kind of scary. Well, sometimes it's scary already because it's so not funny. But
yeah.
it had to be scary. But can you see, like, the piranhas and little shark outfits and... You know,
but that would be funny.
It's clever.
Little shark fins on the piranhas.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
could be good.
So that's my idea.
All right.
But just for a week, that's enough
a
for
week.
The overlay. Yeah.
What,
like,
What's the length of a typical overlay?
About a
not
month.
More than a week.
Month and
about
a month. Month and a
well,
week.
The Haunted Mansion one's what? Like October?
Yeah, the Haunted Mansion overlay is like a full third of its operating season. Yeah. Like from October to January.
Who knows how long Space Mountain's going to be? Anybody? Anybody?
It's a month.
You mean Ghost Galaxy? Yeah.
Exactly, Henry. Yeah, how long exactly. is that going to be?
A month.
I don't know. I hear the wait times are crazy right now. Yeah. Like 130 minute wait times. Yeah. Like
In
September.
Can you sell fast passes?
Yeah.
I assume so. Yeah.
They sell out pretty quick.
Really? Yeah. Oh, jeez. Someone get me a fast pass on the 17th. Thanks.
It would be a good day to follow the touring plan.
Let's not skip ahead.
Shameless plugs, too. Maybe
we haven't heard Henry and Dave yet.
Yeah, we still have two to go here.
So how about you, Henry? What do you think you'd do?
So I'd actually choose an attraction that's near and dear to my heart, which is the Winnie the Pooh attraction for two reasons. One, I think it's kind of like a very, like, they could do like a Winnie the Pooh does Halloween kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
So it's all quiet, about like, mm-hmm. I mean, the story is all about like, you know, events, specific events and stuff. And so the other thing is that like the Huffalump scene would be like so, like I'm already freaked out by the scene so much that like if they did a Halloween overlay,
that
like
could get trippy.
Kids would like, you know, like jump out of the car right then. So
who could be a bumblebee?
So I'm going to go with Halloween overlay for It's a Small World.
Oh no.
Just think about it. All these kids that are like dead around the world.
Oh, famous dead children.
Dave, that's very inappropriate with hunger and poverty in the world.
Make them into zombies. I mean,
the worst... No, you can have zombies. You can
zombies.
Have just like
see, zombies. Zombies. That would be better.
No, Angelina Jolie does not approve.
Every one of them is a zombie. I can go for that.
Yeah.
Like the kingdom. Like when we heard.
No.
Or what, skeletons.
When we hear talking
whatever?
At you know round
zombie,
round
Zombieland.
No, Zombieland. No, at the D23, we were listening to you know Pearson. Talk about his books.
Oh, yeah, Ridley Pearson.
Yeah, and he had all the Small World dolls like to life and break their feet off and come swimming attacking after the boat.
See?
Like, that could be an overlay.
You could start there. But wouldn't that be so creepy? Like, 13 minutes of just crazy, scary little dolls. It's kind of like sorry, Jack, Chucky's back. You know, you
can no. just Mary Blair says no.
Okay, so out of all of our ideas... Only Henry has one that's actually feasible. The rest of us.
My life works just fine. They got all the costumes sitting in the back still.
Plus, Splash Mountain is proximity to Haunted Mansion, so like you get the
the Jungle Cruise. Effect. Those animals look good.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
That was a cricket for you in
my head. Too much work for 1 week. Are you willing to expand your time frame?
No.
Well, I just don't see it happening.
All right, whatever.
Okay.
It's not the first time Disney's rejected my ideas. Won't be the last.
Okay, so...
I wish you guys could see Dave's eyes. Like, he just has this, like, crazy eye move. Like, whoa, it's crazy in here. Silence and move on.
He's just waiting for the crickets.
Yep.
Oh, they've retired for the night. They were on strike.
All right.
So we brought Henry in because
That's why. Henry, help us.
Oh, that's why you brought him in.
Yeah.
Okay. He's a part of the touringplans.com team and part of the unofficial guide, which you may or may not know is a excellent travel book for Disneyland. They also have a Walt Disney World one. I think it's safe to say the Walt Disney World one is probably more popular and has probably had more attention in the past, but
you guys have 850 pages.
Yeah.
Wow.
Too many words.
And you guys are have been putting a lot more focus, it seems like, on the Disneyland one kind of recently and moving forward. Now that you guys kind of got the dialed in on the Walt Disney World one, is that
safe to say? No, definitely. We're one of our big sort of goals in the next couple of years is to bring a lot more focus to our Disneyland book. It's definitely one of the most popular Disneyland guidebooks, but we think it needs its own web presence and I think any good guidebook needs a good website to sort of enhance the information and give you tools and things that you can't do in a book, like searching and you know, getting user input for certain things.
Sure.
So that's one thing we're very excited about.
So just recently came out was the unofficial guide to Disneyland 2010, which is why we wanted to bring Henry on and be able to share a little bit about what's special for the new book and the website associated with it and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. You want me to take it away?
Sure.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Take it away.
So I was actually part of... I just joined the company in July 1st, and I actually was able to take on their research trip with them in May to go to Disneyland, and we had a big checklist on what we update every year. Most guidebooks update every year, so going from the 2009 to the 2010 one, they did a lot of stuff, but the thing I actually got to sort of enjoy, I guess, or be a, take a part of, was we revamped our counter service reviews for the 2010 book.
All right.
So basically for each counter service place, and this is, I mean, it's great to be able to sit down at a meal at like Blue Bayou or whatever, but counter service, you know, definitely there are good options. I'm sure you guys all have your favorites
sure.
within the park. And so we rate each one by value. And I think value is an E through F score.
Okay.
And then quality.
All right.
And quality is typically like good, fair, whatever. And then we also list sort of the selection. So we'll tell you like if you're looking for X, then this is what X provides.
Sure.
And then lastly, we'll give you like sort of our picks. And so like if you're going to, you know, the Bengal barbecue, make sure to try the Safari Skewers because artichoke and you know, bacon is an excellent combination. So
I didn't need a guidebook to tell me that.
No, seriously. That's one of the cool things. So what this actually entailed was going to every single counter service in Disneyland and DCA over the course of like 3 or 4 days, and because we had to pack it in,
that's a lot.
We
literally
we had to. I went like one day we did 4 lunch counter service and 5 counter service dinners.
Wow.
And so literally we would just like we would order everything on the menu, one of everything that was unique. Like you can only try a hamburger so many times because.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Disneyland hamburger, or cheeseburger. And so we ordered everything that was interesting. Everyone tried a bite of everything. So our group sort of, you know, grew and expanded, not just their stomachs. So we had, sometimes we had like 5 or 6 people, and then when some days we had like 10, so it became easier.
Sure.
And so we tried everything and everyone sort of voted and the results are in the book.
Right. Awesome.
And so I think that's kind of, speaks to one of the primary things that differentiates you guys' guidebooks over a lot of other ones is it's very statistics-based as opposed to opinion-based.
We like to say we're very data-driven. Mm-hmm. So both in the sense that we do all of our research and we actually go eat everything, we try everything, we, you know, sleep at the resorts instead of just taking pictures of them. And then another big element of that is we do reader surveys. And so especially for our Disney World book, we get thousands of responses for our reader surveys, and so we factor in what our users think of, you know, of certain restaurants, of certain hotels, and we've gotten really good at I should say they, because they did most of this research. They've gotten really good at asking the right questions, I mm-hmm. think. So things like okay, you stayed at a hotel, would you recommend it to a friend?
Mm-hmm.
Questions that they've evolved over the years as good questions to ask to actually get a better understanding of what someone thought.
Sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I think this is a book I actually pass out to families.
Awesome.
Because, you know, I work with lots of kids and families and people who haven't gone to Disneyland much. And it's been really useful. Like, I've always gotten really positive reviews from it, especially for families who have young kids, because they don't often know what to expect as far mm-hmm. as, like, okay, is my kid going to like this or whatnot? And it's been very successful with my friends. And then when we were down last June, my sister and I, we were down, like, right when the dragon was supposed to be coming out, and there were gobs and gobs of people in the park because the annual pass... Like,
it was like the last weekend, right?
Yet.
The blackout dates.
Yeah,
like that.
And it was insane. Like 65,000, 70,000 people in Disneyland, and they ended up not selling more tickets and blah, blah, blah.
And they were turning people away from Disneyland, right? And telling them to go to DCA.
Like, yeah,
it was a full day.
I've been there a couple times like that, and it's unfortunate.
Really? That happens?
Oh, yeah. It happens a lot. They'll recommend you go to... Or they'll either recommend, or sometimes they'll close the gates to Disneyland for a while, and they'll say DCA, or sometimes they'll open the hours of DCA longer too, I think.
Yeah, I think they, you know, they'll like close, maybe not let people in for like a couple hours or something to kind of let people disperse and leave, and then they'll open it up again.
Yeah.
So Rachel and I use the touring plans, even though like I'd been to Disneyland how many ever times, and so we use the adult touring plan during that trip because we knew it was just going to be packed, and it worked really successfully for us. And you know, we'd get through the things that we want. We didn't finish the touring plan every day. Right. We always just started at the beginning because most of the headliners were in the front part. And we just shake our heads in sorrow for the people who were like behind us because they just were not having as successful as a day as what we did.
That's a good segue here. So talk about touringplans.com a little bit.
So one of the things that is a really cool part of the book is at the very back of the book, there's a plan for which attractions you should hit in which order when you go for certain days. And so and they've sort of separated out the plans. So there are plans for adults, but there's also a plan that we affectionately call the Dumbo or Die in a Day plan, meaning if your kid has to see Dumbo and there are certain Fantasyland attractions that you have to hit, that's sort of a plan for you. Mm-hmm. And basically the way it works is that we've been collecting data around the parks for the past like 10 years. And so that's all gone into a database. And we actually run algorithms. We do some computer magic to basically say, okay, we have all these possible ways we could go through the park. So we could hit this first, then this, and this, and this. And it's statistically mind-boggling how many different paths you can take, especially at Disneyland, because Disneyland has many attractions. I mean, it has upwards of 60, I think, compared to like Disney, Magic Kingdom and Disney World, which only has like 50.
Boo.
Exactly. So
Henry, don't do that. No, it's not nice to boo places like that. I'm so ashamed.
My bad.
It wasn't him.
Right. So at the back of the book, we'll tell you, you go, you should arrive. I mean, if you arrive early, that's the best way to get to avoid lines. And actually, if you follow our plan, you don't have to follow it religiously. You can follow it pretty casually, especially in the mornings. I think it's most important. You can save upwards of hours in line. So it's definitely a good advantage.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, the website right now is very Disney World focused.
Yes.
Can we talk about this?
Yeah, absolutely.
This okay? I mean, are you guys planning to do more with it for Disneyland, or is it going to just stay that way and then the book is going to be more of a help for Disneyland?
Right. I can't offer any, like, obvious, I can't give you any deadlines or anything or promises, but I definitely can say that we're focusing on Disneyland a lot more. Okay. It actually helps the fact that I live out here, so I can sort of be like, hey, I'm taking a trip in a month. I want a Tory plan. We're definitely... we have a very popular Disneyland book, and so we want to make sure that the website gives people information and tools to help on their Disneyland trips as well.
That's cool.
Right. That's great.
So now, I know that you were brought in to work on some special projects, and you probably can't talk on them too much, but can you give any hints on what people should be looking forward to? Or?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing that I really am working on, and I'm hoping that people can check out soon, is I'm working on the website a lot. Mm-hmm. And so we have other things that we're working on.
Sure.
I mean, with our new books coming out, and I should say that I got hired as being a web developer. So I was a web developer at my old job, and now I'm sort of pursuing my Disney passion to program things that, you know, that have variables that are named like Big Thunder Mountain and like, stuff. So it's quite fun.
That's pretty neat.
So, you know, we're trying to provide a lot of unique offerings while you're planning and potentially while you're there in the future about like, you know, giving you more information.
Okay. Sure.
Help plan your
trip. I don't want to get you in trouble with leaking too many.
You have to give at least one secret.
Oh, that is a secret. We're focusing on Disneyland. I think that's our big thing.
That's a secret.
Yeah.
Well, I would just say definitely, though, look up the book. It's worth it. It's, you know, especially if you have people, like, I think most of our listeners probably know people who haven't been to Disneyland very much. And like, I know my friends, the more they find out that I'm into it, they're like, oh, maybe we should go.
Right.
Definitely recommend the book to people and get it yourself. It's got some great hotel recommendations. I'm even considering staying off property in a future trip again. And so
consulting, shut the front door.
Oh, you should totally do it.
Consulting the unofficial guide here.
Anti she off property
is.
Here? Or you are?
I'm
always
I'm pro Super 8, but not Becky.
So I'm going in late October. I booked a hotel for $40.32 a night.
Which I hope
one?
It wasn't the Eden
not
Rock.
The Eden Rock.
No, not Eden Rock.
Which one?
It's a Quality Inn and Suites, like right next to the highway.
That's not.
It's right next to Howard Johnson. It's actually not that bad.
It's not under the
highway. Walkable. It's not under the highway.
That's good.
There you go.
Wait, I have a question for Henry.
Can the dark side, Becky.
Bring it.
Okay, so let's get personal. Are you like a planned person or are you not a planned person?
Planned person? Like,
do you like to plan or do you not to like to
I'm actually
not
in
plan?
The middle. Like, I think especially if you're maybe not if you're just going to Disneyland for the day, mm-hmm. but if you're going to Disneyland on a trip, like a weekend trip or something mm-hmm. like that, like you're investing so much money into it, you might as well do some research and planning. And I think that's mm-hmm. doubly true for Disney World because the average stay is like, you just spend longer days there.
The world aside though, have you used touring plans? Like,
absolutely.
You've used your own research?
Yeah, no, I've used the touring plans in Disney World and Disneyland and mm-hmm. they've definitely worked for me. And then also, you know, we're planning our next trip, my girlfriend and I, in mm-hmm. October, and we've actually used I've never been to a restaurant outside of downtown Disney mm-hmm. and I went to the Blue Bayou once, but like we're trying to figure out what sit down places we should get, and mm-hmm. we actually have some really good reviews and what readers think about it in our Disneyland book.
That's good.
So like we're going to the Napa Rose primarily because, well, yeah. I've heard about it elsewhere, but
mm-hmm. yeah, you know, that's good.
Apparently they have good food there.
Apparently it's okay.
It'll do.
I think one of the cool things to wrap it up on this book is that it's got a lot of good information about little kids, which you kind of alluded to, but just like even what kids are going to be excited or scared of maybe, or, you know, height restrictions. And then also tips on like things to bring with you and how to be able to handle a day with your kids in the parks, which mm-hmm. can be difficult when you're maybe your first trip there.
I know you're trying to wrap it up, but we should mention too that it's funny. Like
it is humorously written.
It's got a humorous yeah. voice to it, and yeah. it's an easy read, and it's not, you know, uncommon for me to pick it up and thumb through and read a section just because it's funny.
Yeah, no, that's actually one of the main reasons I was attracted to it. Like, yeah. I've been reading the Unofficial Guide like casually for years, and I actually, the first thing that attracted me was, one, that it was data driven. It seemed like they were sort of fanatical about getting the research mm-hmm. right, but then two, because they were they had a sense of humor and they had a good style, I thought.
Yeah,
which, so like I think you can do a Disney book without being like bland about
exactly.
Like, yeah, tell you the nitty gritty when it needs to be said, but you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Right on. All right. Well, so today's main topic is going to be the Walt Disney Family Museum. We all were able to attend, woo-hoo! Including Henry. He was able to join us.
Are you going to write a book about that, Henry?
No, the Unofficial Guide to the Walt Disney Museum. Maybe a blog post.
All right. What's your blog?
Blog.touringplans.com.
Okay, we'll visit.
What's your Twitter account?
Twitter.com/touringplans, Facebook.com/touringplans.
And what's your MySpace?
Touringplans.com. touringplans.com.
Touringplans.com. Okay.
There you go. And we'll put links in the forum post for
MySpace, you didn't say.
Awesome. We're not on MySpace.
What?
What? Yeah.
That's a hot spot of the internet.
I got no friends on MySpace.
Oh, so sad.
Literally, if we start a Facebook, MySpace account, it would be a, you know, what's his name? Paul? No.
Tom
would be my only friend.
Tom's everybody's friend.
That's awesome.
That's nice about him.
All right. So, the Walt Disney Family Museum. We went on a D23 preview trip.
That's right.
So, it will be open when this podcast comes out. It will have opened on
October 1st.
Thursday, right? Is that Thursday?
Yep. And it seemed like members of the museum who specifically signed up could also attend this weekend.
Yeah, there were a few. Yes. There were Carol Wood people there, some members, right. some,
what's Carol
some
Wood?
Various Carol Wood. What is it called? The Carol Wood
Society.
Yeah. They kind of celebrate the trains.
Oh.
But they're a Disney fan group. They have Disney legends.
They're pretty big.
Yeah.
Dick Cook was a member.
Yeah.
So the museum's located in San Francisco, actually, in the Presidio.
Near us.
Yay.
It was nice. It's kind of near Mousetalgia Central.
Yeah.
And the Presidio is operated by the National Parks.
Right. It used to be the military and they gave it over to the National Park Service. So it's like 1,400 acres or something right in prime San Francisco real estate.
Oh, yeah.
Right next to the water.
Right in front of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Huge view of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So,
and ample parking.
Holy cow! Best parking lot in all of San Francisco. Yeah,
that's
right
why
there.
I was very surprised.
And free.
I think it's good that they're selling. Well, there's not a whole lot going on in the Presidio now, other than it's a beautiful place just to visit.
It's up and coming.
But this is actually what I thought we might start talking about because in the San Francisco Chronicle, they had a front page story today mm-hmm. about the museum. Very complimentary, great story. But what they were saying is, essentially, it's a beautiful museum. It's both an example of what you could do at the Presidio if you had the resources and an example of why probably not much will be happening at the Presidio because no one has the resources to do it. So I thought it was really an interesting article. I'm really not
going to... Read us a blurb. It's a little one, Jeff.
See, the primary problem is that they're historic buildings, but they have to be retrofitted to, you know, more or less current code before they can re-inhabit them. So
they have to put railroad cars, I mean elevators inside of them.
Yeah, I mean basically
I'm playing on
if you want
here,
if you want to sum up if you want to sum up what they had to say, they're just talking about the National Parks review, what's going to happen into the mm-hmm. to the mm-hmm. barracks buildings. It says the review bar, this is reading from the article, the review bar can't be set so high that nothing gets done unless philanthropists such as the Disney step forward. At the same time, decision makers can't allow slipshod renovations that demean our past or a series of tasteful but oversized additions that tip the historic landscape out of balance. It's a good to have a start, especially when this enjoyable, but the real work lies ahead. So the article was complimentary about what the Disney Museum mm-hmm. has done, but it was also saying, wow, they really had to jump through a lot of hoops to make yeah. this work at the Presidio. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we'll talk about this when we talk about the tour, but when you go in there, they built one place to connect the two barracks, you know, to make it into one space. And you kind of have to walk across this kind of like a tunnel, right? Or not a tunnel, but like a hallway. And it's just glass walls, and you can look out like straight over the Golden Gate Bridge and over mm-hmm. the bay. And it just makes you feel like, how in the world did they get this perfect place for
yeah.
What? No, not the glass.
That's what I thought. It's a big piece of glass.
It's not one big piece of glass.
Okay, I was thinking about one the big view window. Out the window.
Yeah, it was actually. Too one big window.
Yeah.
Yeah, they needed a couple of benches in that room so you could just sit down.
That wasn't one big piece of glass. Didn't no, you see all the little bolts?
It was probably about 100 different
all the sheets.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. You were probably captivated by the view as well. All right.
Move on.
Let's talk about the museum.
All right. So it's split up into 10 different galleries. Do we want to go through? Like, we can't possibly talk about everything that's in all of them.
The hits, hits. The people want the hits.
Yeah, yeah.
But, thanks, Henry. We need you.
The first gallery is called Beginnings, Walt Disney's Early Years, 1901 to 1923.
I'll say it was just cool for me because I haven't read a biography about, mm-hmm. about Disney. So, like, actually, Kate and I, my girlfriend, we took our time through that one. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty cool. Like, I mean, it's... Especially for people who are going who aren't rabid Disney fans. Mm-hmm. I mean, like no one who isn't or
like
no one who is listening to this podcast.
You did.
So I thought that was not really exciting, but it was cool for someone who didn't know the history.
Yeah, they made a good case for why this museum even exists, you know, and not in LA or you know somewhere like that. But definitely, you can hardly walk through that museum without questioning once you're out of there, like why is Walt Disney not more of a national, like he is a national figure commercially, mm-hmm. definitely, but you figure like why is this the first Walt Disney museum? Like he's done so many amazing things mm-hmm. to our popular culture, you know, to the whole world's popular culture. It's just hard to fathom, like even Disney fans, you walk out of there thinking one man, like mm-hmm. somehow, and some of it, even I mean I think the museum is pretty open about some of it's the perfect storm of circumstance, and some of it's him responding to outside influences that just worked out really mm-hmm. perfectly for him. But
he had a lot of failures though before he was successful, so I mean it's not like you can, it wasn't like just all roses.
He also had a lot of successes before he was successful.
Yeah.
Like, that was like after the second or third gallery, it was like I didn't know he did all this like with all the stuff that was supposed to come. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and I mean who was it that was saying, next time I'm going to start in the end? Was that
That's
you, Becky?
Me. Yeah.
I mean, the museum takes you through his life from beginning, from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, Disneyland came late in the game, you know, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah, it's towards the last couple.
Yeah, well, the 50s, you know.
Yeah.
And so he was, you know, already getting around 50, right? When he was only born in 1901 or 19, mm-hmm. somewhere
he was born
around
in 1901.
Yeah, I mean. It's definitely a bite to chew going through this museum. I read somewhere that they estimated the average visit to be 90 minutes, and I just thought, mm-mm. How did they come up with that number?
We spent 3 hours and kind of rushed through it.
Yeah, we are fans.
Yeah.
We are fans, but I mean, I thought, man, even at a good clip, glancing at the walls, you'd be 30 minutes from the front mm-hmm. to the end.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to read. There's a lot of interactive stuff. I mean...
I totally agree, but I think too, like if you think about the average person who goes to like the Louvre in Paris, they run through to see the Mona Lisa and then they run out. Like, and I could think I've spent 3 or 4 days in the Louvre. So, you know, what's the average person? Like,
Yeah, but it's hard.
I hear what you're saying. Like, don't go there and plan for it to be 90 minutes. Go and plan on 3 to 4 hours if you're going to go.
But then I'm wondering, what's the, like, Mona Lisa thing there? You know, there's so many little pieces.
The Disneyland model.
Yeah, the model.
I would say the Disneyland model is probably one of the main, one of the places people would focus their attention. Mary Blair definitely has an imprint on the exhibit,
Mary Blair
though.
Paintings are the best. That's my Disneyland.
There's a lot of good original Mary Blair.
It's not
Mary
a Mary Blair museum. So.
That's my Mona Lisa, though, those Mary Blair paintings.
Which paintings? I'm sorry.
Those Mary Blair paintings in the
there's a lot of
the
them.
Room,
there's a
lot. The room
through
before
the whole museum.
The big window room.
No, there's a room. There's the room with the projections all over the ceiling.
That
the
one.
Film reel. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a lot of Mary Blair artwork in there.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
But don't you think that's the beauty of it? I mean, the Disneyland model was amazing. So just so people who didn't go and don't know, the Disneyland model, it wasn't like one moment in time. It was just kind of lots of rides all in this beautiful model.
Yeah, what was that? Like 150 square feet? Or
it was beautiful.
Like
and it was bigger than my house.
Model.
Yeah, it was.
It was probably about as big as an average living room, though.
Yeah,
like,
it was
a large.
It was huge. But that was the thing I liked about the museum, was I love that. But I think everybody can find, even if you're not a huge fan, like everybody can find, like Becky said, like their Mona Lisa. Like, you know, for some, it was the Disneyland model. For others, it was maybe the Pinocchio little sculptures they based, you know? Like, I think
there was a
things.
Big draw around the train, too, the Carolwood train.
Yeah.
Probably just because
the Lily Bell, the real Lily Bell. Even Disneyland doesn't have the real Lily Bell. They have a replica.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool. I think because of the Carolwood Society was participating in the event, that there were a lot of people interested in that, of course. But that was also pretty neat to see, too.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting the entire time from the very first gallery, it was very storyline driven.
Mm-hmm.
Every like, if you wanted to just read like the text, like you could literally have read an entire biography by the time you left.
Yep.
And then each time it was entirely supplanted by pictures with little blurbs on them that you could have also read, and then video, and then interactive exhibits, and then sometimes just audio. So like, it was very like the entire time you're just overwhelmed by like, you know, 3 or 4 different types of media that you can interact with.
Different means of explaining what they're trying to say. And it was, I think there's 200 video screens in the whole thing, something like that. Like there's everywhere.
Probably more than that.
I would have said 2,000.
No, I think it's 200. I read somewhere 200. But that's, you know, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah.
A lot for 10 galleries, you know.
Yeah,
so I think, like kind of what you said, that you can get the overview, and then everywhere you go there's something that will explain it more and more. Like for instance at the end, so there's the very exit. I know we're jumping all over, maybe we'll walk through this a little bit differently in a moment, but at the very end, so they take you through Walt Disney's death in kind of a memorial room. It's kind of sad.
Sad.
You walk through the part where all the world's remembrances are, and then you come into the very final room and there's just a big movie on both walls, and I stood there, what were we there for, probably 10 minutes or so
at least,
and I wonder how long that movie, like you could probably stand there for half an hour before that movie would ever loop. I don't know how long it is, but it just went,
it was all quotes from people who
just
loved
different
Disney
quotes
and
scenes
and
like everywhere, there's more than you can do through the whole museum.
I was impressed with how they handled that, because I was starting to wonder when I was going out, like when I was in front of the Disneyland model and, you know, kind of going through, like if there's a little brief thing on the Florida project, I'm starting to wonder, okay, what? Are they going to acknowledge the death, or is it just going to be like this end? You know, like what are they going to do?
If you had built Epcot Center, it would have been great.
Yeah.
And then he ruined a magical unicorn off the head.
Exactly. But I really liked that room. I mean, it's sad, but I thought it was nice that they brought it back. It was very retro, like the, you know, where they're playing kind of the newsreel on, you know, Mr. Disney has died and kind of talking about that. I just was really impressed with how they dealt with that.
Yeah.
It was very tasteful. I mean, I don't think it was over the top. And I think a lot of people came out of there very sentimental about it. Like, you know, I even heard someone say, you know, so much for the happily ever after when they came out.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a happy ending. You know, it was just.
It did feel like a family, organization would have something that they would have done.
Kids helped with that one.
What's that?
Like his kids helped with that little room at the end. And like his grandkids. And
yeah.
I think that was nice for me because clearly, I wasn't alive when he died. Thank goodness. But like, I think that room kind of gave you a feeling of what that day must have been like. Because, I mean, everybody has people who've passed away and you know, famous celebrities, and you remember those moments, you know, like everybody remember. Well, now I remember when Michael Jackson died. But, you know, like even like when Princess Diana died or some of those kind of big celebrities, like you just remember like where you were. And to not have that as a person who, you know, wasn't alive when he died, it was nice to have that moment.
Yeah.
And then get out of there because it was too sad for me. Like me and the blondie next to me were crying. It was horrible. We had to get out.
Well, I couldn't even make it to the second, like the last two rooms, like because they're kind of shutting us along.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also like the where they like started a text and then they finished it with like then he passed away. And then I don't know if you saw it, but there was a picture like right before the room with the world reactions where he just like waved. I thought that was like, I was like,
You can cry, Henry. It's okay.
That's okay. I'll hold it together.
I was impressed too with the way that they did the museum. I really enjoy a good museum, and I don't necessarily think the United States does a fantastic job on their museums. I was happy to see the Disney family set the bar very high. I know that's kind of the way museums are starting to go, but I just don't feel like we necessarily do a good job of that as a country. And it was more on par with some of the better museums I've been to around the world as opposed to here in the United States.
Even in comparison to New York, D.C., anywhere.
And there's some good ones in D.C., but absolutely. Just, you know.
This is up there with them, at least. At the very least, is as good as any of those.
If not better than most of them.
I think.
I thought two things. One, it was designed extremely well. Mm-hmm. So, like, they clearly put a lot of effort into, like, furnishing and stuff like that, the insides. Mm-hmm. But also, I thought the relative small size of the rooms actually added to sort of the popping of information. Like, it wasn't this huge building that they had to, like, fill and fill and fill. Mm-hmm. It was relatively small, you know, barracks at one point. So, I thought that they filled it well. And that's that every room is really overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. And it was busy, but it wasn't overcrowded, which is, you know, both the blessing and the curse of having the timed entry where they're only letting in X amount of people per hour. So at least at the beginning part of, you know, the first few galleries, it's not too crowded because people are moving through. But then, you know, it starts getting a little more crowded towards the end where there's a lot more, I think, to see in a small amount of space, like around the Disneyland model and the train and whatnot. It got a little more crowded around there, but otherwise I felt like I may have to wait to read something or listen to something because someone was using it, but it wasn't like I had to wait long.
Well,
I thought too their use of technology was very well done, because I think especially being in San Francisco, you could just totally like go to town with, you know, new technology and stuff that's going to be outdated, you know, in the next year or whatever, like almost like a House of the Future interventions kind of a thing, you know, like one
except
day
better
like one day it's hip and then the next day you're like, what, I have this in my living room last year, what up, you know, I mean. So I think the way that they use the technology, like it wasn't just technology for like look at us, we have new fancy technology sake, like it really did something.
I would say,
and I think even in, you know, 5 years or so, it'll still be
good.
Like it's not gonna be like, what, like that's not okay.
I would say the only thing really that struck me as like, look at us, look at our fancy thing. Where's the touch screens for the little slideshows they had in that one room? Which even that was, you know, think they're, you know, gambling on the fact that that'll just be something that is common, more and more common.
But I feel like it was still useful. It wasn't but just it was for, very like, useful. Showing off for the sake like, of, like, because fancy technology.
It was like, how could they let you choose all this? You know what I mean? Like, it was a very useful function.
They were able to save space by using a digital format that can have lots of different presentations on it that you can pick which one you want to look at. So that was smart.
And also, I mean, you always worry about interactive parts of any museum because you're always just worried about the quality and stuff like that. They're like, we need interaction, and like they give it to some developer and, like me, and like, if we're underpaid or being grumpy, you know, we don't produce quality work. But like the stuff that I know that Becky saw, the book that we saw
that
you showed
cool.
me is really, really cool. And
what book was that? Go ahead.
Go ahead. I don't really remember.
It was by the Fantasia screen
so
that was showing.
There was a book that they had put together. Somebody in the Walt Disney Company had put together, and I should remember their name, but I don't. But it was basically like the special effects guide. And they had, it was a scrapbook essentially where they had taken pictures. For example, the page they had displayed was a picture of girls in like ballet class. Mm-hmm. And then they had notations on the book and stuff, and then they had pictures of hippos on the other page with notations on that. And then when you played with the touchscreen that was next to it, that was a digital copy of the book that was directly to the left of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that the digital copy you can page through. Then you can zoom in on it so that you can read the notations. Mm-hmm. And the clips that they actually use those special effects for came up. Oh. So you could see the clip, for example, from Fantasia, where the hippos are dancing the ballet and kind of understand, like, oh, okay, so these are the things I studied and talked about, and this is how they made that happen. So, like, they had a thing on distortion and how they, and on the way that underwater distortion works, and they had several pictures of that. And then they had the scene where Pinocchio is underwater and he's all distorted. And I was really impressed with it.
Yeah, that's totally awesome.
Like, and it was a big giant touchscreen too.
If you're an animation buff, you could spend 3 or 4 hours just look. Well, they won't want you to stand there at their exhibit for 3 or 4 hours, but literally you could never look at the whole thing.
It was interesting because people weren't looking at it. I don't know if they got it.
Yeah, it was off to the side. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, but clearly, it took time to like digitally scan the entire book and then match pages to other content and stuff. And I think what's really cool about museums being built these days is that they're built with high definition screens.
Right.
It's like all the cartoons, all the video looked extremely, extremely sharp.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other cool thing was the interaction. Kristen, you were really into it. The music stuff. Like,
that was fun.
Here's my first Dizzy World reference of the night. I'm really sorry, but has anyone ever been to the Sounds Dangerous queue?
No.
Like at the end. So Sounds Dangerous is a terrible ride. But at the end, they have this thing where they match. You're watching like a Mickey cartoon. You're supposed to like voice out Mickey's part.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they kind of had a very similar thing at the museum. I don't know if.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a rock band.
Yeah.
It's kind of like rock band. They're trying to show how they did sound effects for old Mickey cartoon. Where you had all these different devices and they kind of had to do it real time. It's not like they could edit today like we do in a computer or anything, so they had to kind of do it as they're watching it, and so there was a script
and like a digital.
I'm just laughing thinking about, like, because they've got the drum up there, right, and like a cymbal, and then they have this box with a rope that you pull that makes the cat like meow and so every time that little cymbal comes across you have to pull the rope or whatever, and it's quite funny.
Well, I just think it was so interesting because they talked about how Disney came up with the bouncing ball, like the technique to keep the musicians with the film. Because I always think, like, how in the world does that happen? I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
And they show, and that was part of the exhibit, was they had this bouncing ball that went up and down. And so when you had to hit the drum, you had to hit it when the ball hit the bottom of, you know, of the platform or the screen or whatever. But I just thought, like, even if Disney just would have invented that, and I'm sure, again, it wasn't just him alone, but the Disney, you know, corporation had just invented that technique. Like, that's huge right there. That's worthy of a museum in itself, nevertheless, everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was like the pre-dubbing universe, right?
Where
you saw, you know,
a ball.
Like 3 minutes of thing, and you have to play for 3 minutes.
It's
can just record everything out of in the same.
Yeah. Well, in the same room, did you guys all see a copy of our theme song?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was very exciting.
On the memorabilia wall?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a good selection of memorabilia. Not overwhelming, but they kind of represented all the layers of early collectibles. I thought that was pretty cool.
Do you want to tell them what you saw though in that case?
No, I don't remember. What did
the
I see?
The button.
Oh.
The red
they
button.
They got snookered. Yeah, there's a fake piece of memorabilia in there. One of the little buttons they have in there says, what does it say? Mickey Mouse sold here or something. It's the red and yellow sign
Mickey
that
Mouse
Kay Kamen used to
like
put
that.
Up in Mickey Mouse store. Kay Kamen used to put that sign up in the stores where they would sell their licensed Mickey Mouse stuff, but it never was a button, and it's a popular ripoff. You see them on eBay once in a while. I got taken. I bought one, but there's a big article about it in the Hakes Disney Anna Guide, which is I'm surprised that they didn't catch that.
Did you point it out to somebody?
No, I mean, who was I going to point it out to?
Derek,
anybody
was I
in the
do?
Gallery?
Go say, hey, that's a fake. I'll take it off your hands.
I don't know if we can call the employees their cast members since they're not really actually part of.
They're not cast members.
They're employees at
they're
least.
They're trying.
They have
all
really
the ones
cool
that,
costumes.
They have cool
oh
costumes.
No, bad costumes.
What the purple one, the red?
I liked it.
No,
I thought
bad fabric. Looked itchy.
I think they look sharp.
Yeah, I thought they looked sharp too.
But they were all very friendly,
they
very
were
helpful.
Nice.
Like I didn't have to talk to them
pretty knowledgeable
for anything, but they seemed to know what they're talking about. I overheard a lot of conversations
they had with
other
them.
People, and they were great, like
especially for the first weekend.
Yeah exactly.
You're on the ball.
Yeah.
Derek told us that in one of the displays someone stole a mug off the table. When you go to the Disney Family Museum, don't steal, people.
I know, and he said, I don't know why they took it. It was just a mug we put there for a prop. It wasn't like an original 1920s mug
someone
or anything.
Stole the mug.
But someone took
Don't
it.
Don't steal, already? Thieves.
A lot of those things are reproductions. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some really great original stuff, and a lot of the original stuff you can tell they put away and they put out reproductions. So that's, you know, there's enough of a balance, I think, of
Don't
real
steal
things
it anyway.
Versus reproductions.
Yeah, because of the whole Mouse Vinyl thing, I'm into the records. And they had different records periodically, and some of them, I was like, wait a minute, that looks a little odd. And looking closer, all it was like somebody scanned and then printed on poster board and put it up there. But if you don't look closely, it looks like it's the record hanging there, but it's not. Yeah.
But I mean, that's
I'm
just
okay
a display
that.
Technique.
Yeah, I know.
So, but that button kind of irritates me. Because it's almost a collectible in itself, because someone made however many of those and sold them. And it's been a while, like in the 90s or early 90s or something like that. And yeah.
How much did you pay for your button?
I don't know, $15 or something.
Too much. It was fake.
Yeah, it's true. Not. They never made a button with that sign. That's the thing. So anyway, but that's beside the
point.
But
we still love you, Disney family. Don't feel shunned.
It's a beautiful exhibit. And one of my favorite things was, and I guess this is going to be the show. We'll just be jumping around saying some of the things.
We usually stay linear. Possibly go through.
We're already not at all linear.
Never.
So
too late to go back now.
One of my favorite things was when you're still up on the top floor of the exhibit and you move out of one of the galleries and you can look down through a multiplane camera.
That's nice too.
And they have a scene. I think it looked like Bambi or something. Yeah. A scene with some birds flying in a background and a foreground. You could see kind of how you can kind of imagine how it worked, you know, when they filmed multiple layers of cells. I thought that was fascinating. There's only three of those, right? You saw one at the studio
tour.
There's
one at the that's what they told us. There were three of them. They had one at the studio's archives, and then they had one that was on loan to the museum, and then there's one more.
Is it not Disney World's? The
it might be.
Park?
I think it could be.
I think that's MGM. Where it is.
Yeah. So I thought that was fascinating that to be able to look down through the top of it.
It was.
You know, because it kind of gave you a better idea of what it really is doing.
And that was really something that Disney invented, you know, or the Disney company invented the whole multiplane in that way. So it was pretty special, like, that they were able to do that. In fact, you know, they got all kinds of awards for inventing that.
Yeah.
And if you go to the shop, you can see it up close, the base.
Yeah.
I don't know that. That's jumping around. The shop, I wasn't overly impressed. I think there was some nice stuff in there, but I didn't buy anything.
I loved it. I did too.
I think they could have done a lot better.
It's not the World of Disney, and I think you have to tell yourself, like, this is not theme park merchandise. Don't expect it. And, like, that's the thing. Like, I think we're just, at least for me, like, at first I thought, like, wait a second, this isn't, like, have that Disney stamp on it. I'm like, well, because it's not Disneyland. It's not theme park. You know, it's not really the Disney company, right? I mean, it's the family, which is
it's not the Disney company.
So I think, like, once I told myself, like, I'm not in the World of Disney,
and in fact I'm surprised they even had Mickey Mouse on anything. I mean, I know Disney is working very closely with them, but nevertheless, you know, it's not the Disney company.
It was a different shopping experience, but I enjoyed it thoroughly.
I felt like there could be, like, when I've been to a lot of other museum shops, they usually have certain replicas of things that you can buy, and I didn't feel like there was enough of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say I expected there to be prints of a lot of things, and I expect they probably will eventually have that. Like, they didn't even have the official catalog yet, which I know they'll have. I mean, I think it comes out for sale when they open. I was hoping
you get
it
if you're
the
$500 member, like, it comes with it.
Yeah,
right?
Or you can just buy one.
And I think it might come out middle of October, but sometime in October it's coming out.
So, you know, maybe there's things still to come. There were a couple prints or a couple exhibits I saw in there that I thought they should sell that as a poster. Right. I liked this is
whole World War II exhibit.
This is one other thing that I found.
Even the naked ladies.
Yes, that was awesome.
This is one other thing that I found fascinating. They had in right when the studio, one of the exhibits about when the studio had just expanded and they moved Hyperion, I think. I don't remember exactly how it went, but they were talking about Walt Disney's Hollywood, and they had a page out of the employee handbook blown up, and it was the hierarchy of how everything works when they're putting together a motion picture.
Oh, the operation thing that was the big circle?
A big flow chart, and right up at the top, big orange block is Walt, and then it had, like, all these arrows down from Walt through the rest of the flow chart, and, you know, people are always kind of saying, the difference between then and now, and, you know, that it's all about Walt Disney. It was a good just reminder that really he really did say yes or no to everything then. Like, through the early years, like, yes or no, it was, you know, through the eyes of Walt Disney. So it kind of gives you perspective on how it is now, and how it's almost similar looking flowchart, I would imagine, but there's no big Walt
There's
at
no
the top.
Walt. Yeah.
I don't think it's Bob.
It doesn't even say shareholders. It's just different, is what I'm trying to say. There is in a corporation like that, really, there's not a decision maker.
It was a nice chart.
Like that, of that type, that says yes or no to everything.
I would say that the museum overall was not necessarily kid friendly, and it wasn't that it was unfriendly. It just, like, with the height of things, the interactive components and whatnot, it wasn't set up for kids. And I don't think that, unless the kids were maybe junior high or older, are necessarily gonna enjoy it or appreciate it much. So that's just something to probably that's my opinion. I don't know what you guys think.
I would agree. It was
I would caution people taking kids there.
I would totally agree. Yeah. I didn't think there was very many like interactive things that the kids would appreciate and I agree with you even on height things, like they might even not see certain things. Like,
But at the same time, Museum. They had these occasional little listening devices for you to listen to, which weren't long enough for me to stand up, like, upright and listen to most of the time.
Yeah, but you're freakishly tall. Did you hear that, Mom?
That's funny.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, also, there are a few places to sit down, actually.
Yeah, yes, like, that's one of my complaints about it, too.
That's especially not uncommon, but yeah.
Maybe that was because of us. We, you know, it took 3 hours to get to the
thing. Yeah, well, that's probably perfect.
Yeah.
You need an Omni mover.
They should have, like, an intermission area or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I thought another exhibit that I thought was kind of cute was the ink and paint stuff, because, you know, when you walk through the archives on the archives tour, they talked about that and kind of showed us some of the paints still and talked about the different colors. And if you took the time to read the labels, like, they had Pluto yellow and they had Donald Duck yellow, and you could pick up the little phones and listen to the girls talk about working in the ink and paint club. And I got a kick out of that. I thought it was fun. They talked about, like, they were getting ready to go out for tea, and Walt walked in, and they're like, "Oh, we'll stay." He's like, "No, go. I'll just look at your work while you're away." And it's just cute.
So I got a question for you guys. What did you guys think of the Parks exhibit, or really at the end? Because it's a big room.
It's a huge room.
As I said, then it reminded me of the Star Tourist queue. It's long and windy.
Yes,
there was lots of things going on.
Yeah, this is for Tim Babb, but it reminded me of the Star Trek experience that was very similar. You'd walk in and there was a big round walk like that would go through props from Star Trek and stuff. And it was really neat. Like, they took you downstairs in a really novel way, and a good use of the space to make it so that you're kind of like journeying through this attraction. I think they really wanted it to feel like, wow, it's an attraction. Yeah. I loved it. I mean, that Disneyland model was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I thought, and I was trying to figure out, like, what are they trying to do here? Because I knew it was, like, a little weird. Like, this wasn't with this and this. And there's a little sign at the end that finally says it's not any time of Disneyland. It's just most of the different things that have been featured there over the years.
They call it, like, the Disneyland of Walt's imagination.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Right.
So was it, like, exact year and time?
Yeah. Some things that didn't exist together were all in there. So,
but it was probably everything up until he, you know, passed away, or things that he was working on before he passed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably how you put it.
There wasn't Big Thunder on the model.
No.
It was still, like,
the mine train. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
That's a good point. I thought it was a well-done room, though. The thing I liked about the museum is that I felt like you got to hear a lot of things kind of straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Oh, there are,
like,
a lot of direct recordings from Walt.
Right.
Yeah. And then at the same time, it was almost overstimulation at some points, too. Like, I thought that room in particular, you've got the globe up there that's got different pictures going around. Then you've got all the stuff on the railing that you can read, plus the exhibits that the railing is showing, and then you've got the TVs talking about, you know, TV Walt, and, like, I don't know, sometimes it's hard for me to focus on one thing.
Well, also, that comes near the end of the exhibit, so
you're
kind of overly stimulated by
and
then.
I think that's kind of what I was trying to get at with the whole, I'm going to do it backwards next time.
Yeah. So walk to the end and then come back and maybe catch a little bit of the that stuff at the beginning. I would like to do that, too. One thing that kind of bothered me a little bit was the Mickey Mouse Club of the 50s got, like, a small shelf.
Yeah.
shelf. And
they ran out of space.
I know Walt Disney had more, and he was more into the Mickey Mouse Club of the 50s than just that shelf. So it was interesting that they, you know, didn't really. I'm imagining maybe someday they'll have another exhibit about that, because it really gets kind of a short shrift, I think. But
well, I thought in general, like, I think if you took everything, like, if you were like, okay, I need to build a museum on Walt Disney's life, and I think they would split up, like, I would split up exactly as they did. But mm-hmm. Still, as a huge Parks fan, I thought the Parks, whole Parks exhibit could use a lot more. Like, they sort of, they went, you know, they did a bunch on Disneyland, and then they went straight into World's Fair and then Disney World.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it'd be really cool to see something, like, on animatronics that I thought could, you know, was a huge invention.
Yeah, they only kind of touched on that with the Abraham Lincoln mm-hmm. thing.
Right. And so I thought, you know, like, if you're a huge, huge Parks fan, and really that's, like, your number one connection to the Disney universe, I think you might want to skip to that part quickly or feel like they could have expanded on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it touches more on the fact that it's really about Walt and not mm-hmm. about the company and not really about the parks. It's just about Walt's life and well, those were parts of it. So I agree. I would have loved to see more on that stuff, but I kind of understood what they were trying to do with it, especially not long after that you see his passing. So
maybe some of that stuff will end up being like the traveling exhibits at some point, you know, like,
yeah, because they're gonna have like a special exhibit hall in one of the other buildings, which used to be a gymnasium.
Oh yeah, I tried to sneak into it. Well, not really, but I saw it.
Yeah,
but I think they said that's not gonna be ready till 2012.
Yeah,
ooh, so that's a long time.
That's
from
a
now.
Long time from now. But you know,
yeah, there's
it's coming. It'll be open by then.
Yeah, really.
There's an almost unlimited number of things they could focus on.
Yeah,
like music and the parks mm-hmm. and like I said, TV things.
And they also have a theater on site, which they're going to be
down at the bottom, right? Yeah.
Down in the basement, I guess it is.
Yeah, 100 seats, I think. So kind of intimate, but big enough to be, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah.
And downstairs, actually, next to that, there's just this kind of open area where there's a bunch of attraction posters from back in the day, which is pretty cool, too.
Yeah.
Thought that was neat.
Well, they're already going to be doing some filming of some, or some showing of some films,
yeah, there's
right?
already, yeah. There's already
like the
some
Halloween
things.
Stuff. Who's excited about that besides me?
That's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be cool.
No one else go because there's only 100 seats and I might need at least one.
Yeah.
So for those that are curious, I think it's $20 for mm-hmm. adult admission.
That's
well,
it.
Worth it.
Yeah.
That's high, I think, for a museum.
Do they
I think
have
it's
a
worth
separate
it.
Kids admission?
Do you think
there
it's high?
There is a separate kids
yeah,
one.
Yeah, kids admission is, I think it's $12.50.
Is that what it
or
is?
Or maybe $16. That I think it's $12.50.
The museum was only like $10.
But
the De Young is like $28.
Is it?
Yeah.
Nice.
If you
it's
want,
cheaper than the Cal Academy of Sciences.
And then they also have memberships, which I think it was like 100
and... Isn't it 75 a year?
It was like 75 going
year,
up.
And then 125 for dual and all the way up to the founding member, like $500.
But you get stuff.
Oh, yeah. You get stuff with everything.
Don't you kind of want to be a founding member? Because you pay it once and you're in for life. And you get 20 guests per year.
I would like to be a founding member.
Like, that's good.
Mostly because I'd like to be part of whatever special, you know, they're going to have special presentations.
Because you get a pin, that's why.
Yeah.
He doesn't collect pins.
And the pin.
And a book. And special. There's lots of great things. And a certificate. People can donate to you, Jeff. I'll give you $1.
Sign up, Kristen.
Yeah, that's okay.
Let's do it.
Jeff needs it more than I do. I'll be second.
All right.
Well, that was a nice thing I said.
It was weird, but thank you.
It wasn't weird. When I get it, I might
so
get
none of you guys remember, so would you consider being
not
a
yet. Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out where to plug in. But yeah, definitely.
Derek said time it well. One of the cast members we talked to, he said there's going to be some better things coming a couple months from now. Mm-hmm. So he said if you can hold off, wait a couple months to get your membership.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of think
really?
That's mm-hmm. often the case. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
A couple of things, or at least one more other thing I wanted to say. Friend of the podcast, Chris Merritt.
What up, Chris?
Has a great, beautiful map in the
he
exhibit.
Does.
It's called Walt Disney's Hollywood Land, and mm-hmm. there's this, it's prominently, it
it's
really
nice.
Helps the exhibit I think it's in. There's an exhibit about Walt's, you know, when the studio moved from his, you know, wherever they first started in his, whatever that small building was to his next step. There's
Hyperion.
Just a yeah the Hyperion studio. There's just a big map of mm-hmm. all the different studios in Hollywood and where Disney was, and it's really neat.
And all his family's houses are on there. Like this
yeah,
uncle
yeah.
is here,
yeah.
this aunt is there. Mm-hmm. Like
yeah,
it was
all the
really
Disney
neat.
Family is on located on the map too. And so I thought that was kind of fun to look at,
yeah.
and it really I thought it fit the exhibit really well.
Well, so we knew it was Chris Merritt even before we saw his name. It just looks like him.
Did he make it for the museum, or was it created for something
you know,
else?
I don't know. I suspect he did it for the E-Ticket magazine, because I think I've seen that before
okay.
somewhere.
Yeah.
It's just because the Walt Disney Family Museum bought the E-Ticket
right.
magazine, so all those assets are theirs.
Hmm.
I suspect that's what it was from. But Chris Merritt has said, I think he's, I mean, he draws those maps with kind of a half an homage to Sam McKim,
yeah,
who did all those great Walt Disney maps, you know, from the those aerial drawing maps that he did. So it really is a great, beautiful poster. That's one of the things I thought, I wish they made this as a poster.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of things like that where I wished that they'd have it in there, which a lot of big museums usually do that kind of
thing.
Give
them some time.
I know. I think for them just opening it, they did a fantastic job. Like, there weren't any big blunders or anything that I noticed while we were there.
Mm-mm.
Well, and I thought the timed entry worked really well, too. I think you guys said that earlier.
Yeah, even like, for Disney fans, like, and even the kind of fans that closed the place down like us, it was, like, not unacceptably crowded. So
no, not at all.
I would imagine with normal public that will go through a little bit quicker, it should be about right. Yeah.
Well, those tickets went fast. Like, I didn't get any.
Right.
I was too slow again.
Yeah, we got lucky again and got tickets to that and were able to.
Lucky. That was your skill, Dave. That was skill.
That's why they keep me around here.
So. Super fast
for his super fast T23 ticket getting technique.
Yes. I think we're going to be running out of luck one of these days.
Don't say that.
I'm just,
we all say go, right?
You and I forgot even that they were having the next studio tour in November.
I'm kind of over that.
Okay.
Wow.
Cool.
Whoa.
One last person I have to fight for tickets.
Yeah, I'm kind of over it.
Okay.
I've got other things on my list. We'll talk about that later.
So why don't we go around? Thumbs up, thumbs down. So Jeff?
Thumbs up.
Becky?
Definitely two thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen?
Yeah, I'll go. I'll be a member.
Henry?
Both thumbs.
All right. Yeah, and myself, I agree. Definitely thumbs
stuff.
Up. It was very well done. I will definitely be returning there and prepare to spend lots of time there if you're a Disney fanatic.
Well, can I say too, like, spend the whole day in the Presidio. I met my friend in the morning for some brunch at the Presidio Social Club, which was like maybe 3/4 mile just down the road from the museum. We had brunch. We walked around for 2 hours. It's beautiful. Like, all the restoration going on in there. I mean, and we lucked out with, like, the beautiful, sunny San Francisco day. Like, hooray for that. It's not always like that there. And take a jacket just to be prepared.
You never know.
Yeah, but I would say even on a cloudy day or a foggy day, you know, like, go and book your... Because you can still do your timed entry when you buy your tickets online.
Of course.
You know, time your entry and just plan on spending the day. It's really a nice area to walk around.
Yeah, they give you like a 15-minute window of when you're supposed to show up, and supposedly they're going to be strict about it.
Yeah,
I'm sure they have to say that, but
yeah.
But also plan earlier, like especially for your first time.
Yeah.
Don't go at 3 if it closes at 6. Try to go earlier.
Who knew that that was going to be 3 hours was not going
to
be
But I'm actually really excited to go to the second time because I think you know the first time if you're focusing on storyline or and you know where everything is, you know what the pace you have to take.
Yep.
Like at the end, especially I think I feel like progressively I had to skip more and more things as I went through.
Yeah.
So this time I could be like,
my brain got tired.
Know what's up.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot to absorb. I know I felt bad even when you had asked me a few questions. I was just my brain was overloaded. I couldn't even process. I was like, huh?
What?
I was so distracted.
One other thing that looks promising is how they're going to be involved with the community because, or not the community, but the arts. Like the San Francisco Symphony is doing a, and Jen and I are going. We got tickets. They're doing a benefit, or not even a. I don't know if it's a benefit, but
just
a,
music
a concert in conjunction with the Walt Disney Family Museum. And there's going to be.
When are you going?
It's one night. It's October 15th, I think.
Oh.
I think that's what it is. But it's the girl who used to sing Christine in the San Francisco Phantom is the soloist.
You love that girl.
Yeah, we go see her every Christmas. She does the Pipe Dreams organ concert there every Christmas. But should be a great show. So all that to say,
lots of good events if you look on
all
the website.
All that to say, promising beginning to their involvement with the arts community in San Francisco.
And they had banners up on the light poles literally all over town for the museum. Like, they're pushing this.
You got to see them because you're stuck in traffic.
We did
plan
get to look at them.
An extra hour to get there for sure.
Yeah, it's, you know, far, far northwest part of town. So
yeah, there's not a great way to get there because San Francisco, the freeways, they all go through town to get to the Golden Gate Bridge. So it's like
through
you're going
City
to the
streets,
Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah. Right. So,
but yeah, definitely a 10. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today's episode. And as always, we want to thank you for listening. You can email us at comments@mousestalgia.com and give us your feedback. You can call our toll free 800 number at 1-888-798-9298. That's 1-888-798-9298. You can also join us over on facebook.com/nostalgia, myspace.com/nostalgia, twitter.com/nostalgia, and pretty much anywhere else /nostalgia.
Can I say something about our Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay. So I keep close tabs on this.
Facebook report.
So we were at 100.
Have we reached our limit?
We need a theme song. We were at 134, and then one day we were at 133. Someone unfanned us.
Oh, no.
I know. Like, whoever you are.
Well, you know what? That might have been me.
Was it? No, it wasn't you. It wasn't okay. When you quit Facebook and you came back.
Okay.
It was like 2 days ago.
Wait, so is this the group or the fan page?
This, I don't know what it is. It's something with
this is the group. This is the group.
This is the group. Actually, and then, and we're back to 134, so I don't know if it was the same person like accidentally unfanned us or we just got a new person, but please don't do that because it's hurtful.
All right.
Fair it could enough. Just be Facebook. Facebook occasionally has database issues and
they
just come unplugged. You're just defending Facebook right now. Are you trying to move up in the world from touring plans?
Oh, boy.
Wow. I'm just saying. So, right. Yeah. So once you join, just you're a lifer. That's what I want to say about that.
Lifers only.
Yeah.
So slow but steady. We don't want a mob of people
We've
joining.
We've kind of flatlined at 134. So, you know, there's room for a few more. Come on, people.
And moving right along. As Kermit the Frog would say, you can also join us over on our forums by going to nostalgia.com and clicking on the forums. And of course, you should go check out Henry's touringplans.com and visit there. And also check out the book at your local bookstore. You can find it at any Barnes & Noble, Borders,
Amazon.
If your bookstore doesn't have it, you should probably be shopping at a different bookstore.
Henry, will you sign it for people if they ever meet you?
Absolutely. Even though my name is nowhere on the book, I will sign it.
All right.
That's awesome. If you want me to sign it as my boss, I'm cool with that too.
Yeah.
You can say, like, I ate here.
Yeah, you can sign on, like, the ones where you did the reviews for or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when you had a yearbook and they signed next to their picture.
Yeah.
Like that could be you next to your counter reviews. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think it's time to go. So let's go Carpe Kingdom.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. See ya.
Excerpt of The Sorcerer's Apprentice performed by Daniel Bautista and used under Creative Commons license. What? No Mickey Mouse? What kind of party is this? Arranged and performed by Kristen Nowicki. Visit Mousetalgia online at mousetalgia.com or visit us on MySpace at myspace.com/mousetalgia or visit us on Facebook by searching for Mousetalgia.
That's a wrap.